Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Your wife asked before it started, you know, what makes this different than a tribute band? I didn't have a good answer for it.
I still don't.
Hey, this is Jim here on Rock of the Suburbs. Patrick Foster is taking a day off, but I have with me here my concert buddy, Kevin Goff. Hey, Kevin.
Hello. Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. So, this episode, we're going to talk about our recent concert experience. Just as we record this, just a couple of nights ago, you and I went and saw something I would say it was a pretty unique experience.
Definitely.
Right? And anybody who follows REM probably has read something about this tour, because it was in the news quite a bit from last week when there was an event in Athens, Georgia. Basically, here's what it was. It's the actor Michael Shannon, along with some you know, fairly well-known indie rock musicians. We'll get to them in a minute. But Michael Shannon was singing REM's Murmur. That's how this thing was billed. Now, it ended up being more than that, but it was all, you know, an REM show. And for people who don't know Michael Shannon, he's a very intense actor. He's been around for quite a while. He's, you know, mostly a movie, you know, film actor, but he's also done some TV. I just saw him in the George and Tammy miniseries on Showtime, where he played George Jones. He was in Boardwalk Empire, which I've never seen, but I know that's supposed to be a great show. Yeah. I know he was General Zod in some of the more recent DC.
Someone else told me that too. Yeah.
DC superhero movies, a villain. I've seen him in a couple other things. And if you go way, way, way back, and this is so funny because, you know, when this movie came out, of course, nobody knew who he was. And it's like, if you rewatch it now, you're like, hey, that's Michael Shannon. He has a really bit part in Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And he's young.
That is true. Yeah, that one came up.
Yeah. So anyway, last fall, I read somewhere that he and this musician, Jason Narducci, were playing a show in Chicago celebrating Murmur's 40th anniversary. And they were going to do the whole album, and Michael Shannon would be singing. And Jason is an accomplished guitarist and bassist. I knew him from, well, going way back, he was in a band called Verbo. And if you haven't heard their stuff, it's really cool. In fact, one of their albums was produced by Bob Mould. And I think that's how I heard of Verbo, was, you know, because of my Bob Mould fandom. But it's funny because now Jason plays in Bob Mould's touring band, and I think on his albums too. More recent albums. And he also is the touring bassist for Superchunk these days. And so I kind of knew who he was, and I read about this, you know, Michael Shannon thing in Chicago, and I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And they just seem to be doing it because they love REM and love Murmur and wanted to mark the anniversary of that. But apparently that went so well that they decided to do a little tour with, you know, the same concept. And they played in D.C., at the Black Cat. And as I mentioned, this came a little bit after they played in Athens, in which all the members of REM attended that show.
And it went viral.
Yeah, it totally went viral because, you know, to have all four, it was like a mini REM reunion, even though they didn't all play. But apparently at one point they were all on stage together, at least. And at various points in that show, different members of REM played along with some of the songs. I believe Michael Stipe was the only one who didn't participate. He didn't actually perform, right?
That's what I heard as well. And it's interesting, the headlines, like, they're all there to grab you. It's like, REM performs for the first time in 17 years, and it's not really the case.
Right, right. But still, that would have been amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then apparently the between that Athens, Georgia show and the one we saw in D.C., they played in Chapel Hill, North Carolina at the famous Cat's Cradle, and Mitch Easter played apparently quite a bit with them. Mitch Easter, of course, from Let's Active, and he was he was the co-producer of Murmur.
Yeah, they said he played like seven songs with them or something.
I think he was also co-producer on Reckoning, if I have that right.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. definitely Chronic Town and first two.
Yeah. So anyway, we didn't see any special guests, but we got to see this show. And Kevin, I want to get your impressions here real quickly. But the first thing I want to ask you is this. This show was announced last fall.
Right.
And like I said, I noticed it right away when Black Cat announced it because I had read about the Chicago thing. And it just sounded like really weird and interesting. And so I think, did I bring it to your attention? Is that how
that
worked?
Yes, you did.
Okay. And what did
It was the weekend of the Suburbs Fest.
Yes.
You were like, hey, this thing's coming up. Right. Are you interested in going? I was like, heck yeah, let's pull that together.
Well, I was going to ask what you first thought when I brought this up.
I was like, oh, it's a tribute band. But
then
when you read into it, it's very hard to explain to people. You and I have talked about that a little bit. But it's just like leading up to it to get people excited about it. It was like, it's just this weird thing with this actor that you know. I'll say his name. You may not know his name right off the bat, but I promise you know who this person is.
Right.
And he's going to do REM albums in full. And they're just kind of like, tribute band? Nah, it's not the real thing. You know? So.
Right. It's so funny. Yeah. It was so hard for me to explain this to people, what this was. And like you said, Michael Shannon is one of those actors, like you said, people may not even know him by name, but if they look at a picture of him, they're like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
He has that.
He's that villain.
Yeah. He has very distinct big screen features in his face. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He's that kind of actor and a character actor type, you know? Well, but here's what I want to ask you because, your wife brought up a good point. Our wives also went to the show and your wife asked before it started, you know, what makes this different than a tribute band? You know, just going to see a tribute band, which, by the way, I mean, there are so many tribute bands these days for all kinds of bands, including REM, right?
Yeah.
I didn't have a good answer for it.
I still don't.
That was the thing, too, because here's what I said at the time before the show, and I have to amend my thinking. What I said to her was, well, I don't think they really try to imitate REM. You know, they're sort of just giving their take on Murmur. But then having experienced the show and even hearing Michael Shannon admit this on stage, they really were trying to imitate REM. They were trying to get, as he said, as close to the sound of the recordings as they could. And they had six people on stage to do that.
Yeah, they had to do it with six people because, you know, REM would have to do it with four, could do it with four, but they needed six to be able to pull it off. But yeah, that was, that I took that away too. And even some of his movements, Michael Shannon, were very Michael Stipe like. I don't think he was trying to imitate him, but I think he was trying to get the energy there and the impression.
Yeah. Here's how I think of that is, and it's funny, having seen the George Jones series, you know, I think an actor, especially one of his caliber, when they are playing a part of a real person on screen, they try not to do an impression as much as sort of capture, you know, kind of the essence of the person, right? And that's kind of how I felt about this. Like, he wasn't trying to, you know, do an impression of Michael Stipe, but he was sort of channeling some of Michael Stipe there. You know what I mean?
I mean, you've seen REM. You've seen Michael Stipe perform. He's like flailing his arms and he's doing these, you know, movements the whole time. He wasn't trying to do that, but I think like the early days of REM where Mike's holding on to the microphone in a particular way and moving his head a little bit, I think he was trying to sort of keep it centered on that and not the overall movements of Michael Stipe on stage.
I think that's it. And I thought his singing was very good, I thought. Which I think was hard to pull off because, you know, Stipe has such a distinct voice. You know, again, I don't think he was trying to sound just like him, but he just kind of has a voice that works for those songs.
Yeah. I asked you after the show, I was like, do you think he's going to play him in the REM movie when it comes out?
It's like
he could pull it off.
He could. I think the age is an issue at this point.
Unless they de-age and what would be the story? There's no drama, right?
Well, there's that too. The band, you know, famously no real drama other than like Bill Berry getting sick, right?
Right. Yeah. That one story to tell, it's all around Bill Berry.
Yeah. So. And speaking of Bill Berry, I will mention this too. So another of the indie rock musicians who were part of this touring band was John Worster on drums. And I like him a lot. In fact, on the old show, we interviewed John Worster. And he also plays in Bob Mould's band. He famously was in Superchunk for a long time. He just recently left that band. He's also in the Mountain Goats. And just a fantastic drummer. But I noticed he wasn't on a very high riser or anything. So it was a little bit tough to see him, which was unfortunate because his drumming style is like a kind of is generally like one of those. And you're a drummer, Kevin. Like he's one of those drummers that sometimes you just kind of watch, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Your eye goes to him and you watch
him. I didn't expect that, but yeah.
It was a little harder to see him. But I did notice that he was wearing like a black vest, a white like ruffled tuxedo shirt, and then that sort of like Southern, like Colonel Sanders looking tie, that black tie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was Bill Berry. Yeah.
Yeah. That which was is the Bill Berry look. Yeah. But again, it's like, I didn't feel it was like overly kitschy. I just thought it was like a little nice little nod to Bill Berry.
And I will say, I saw him play with Bob Mould, but it was many years ago, and I didn't really, I was aware of him through the podcast and the interviews you'd done and that kind of thing. So I paid a little bit of attention to his drumming, but didn't really pay attention. But the other night I was watching him and I'm pretty sure he was trying to play like Bill Berry plays. Yeah. You know, the only thing he didn't have, Bill Berry used to play with gloves. So I wondered if maybe Bill Berry didn't do that all the time, but times I remember he used to play with gloves, and that would have been like my indication that he's playing like Bill Berry. But like the way he hit certain drums and the cymbals and those kinds of things, he was spot, like he was doing it exactly as Bill played it on those tracks. He was not trying to like hit cymbals at different times or put his own sort of spin on it. He was really trying to recreate how Bill Berry played the drums.
That's so interesting.
That's how it felt to me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was great.
So basically the way the show went down was they come out and just, you know, with no real fanfare, just launch into Radio Free Europe. And then just sort of went from there.
Yeah, the opening act, though, worth mentioning, right? Like, I don't – maybe jumping ahead of you, but I don't know what the connection they have to that band, but I think he came out with more fanfare than this band did. We can come back to them.
Yeah. But. No, Dave Hill was the the opening band, and it really he's like kind of like a stand up comic who also plays music.
Yeah,
is how I would say, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, he came out like as if he's like an arena rock show kind of thing. You know, and really played it up. And he was great. I thought he was really funny.
Oh, definitely. Like, he had more fanfare than when they walked out. They just came out and they just started playing Radio Free Europe, like you were saying.
So. Yeah, yeah. And played a few, you know, like they did Murmur in Order, played a few songs. Then Michael Shannon did do some, you know, stage banter. But a lot of that was really endearing, I thought, because he would talk a lot about his personal experiences meeting the guys from REM. And I don't know if he was specifically talking just about the previous week or it was more than that. Other times, it wasn't quite clear. But obviously, they spent some real time together and he's gotten to know the band.
Definitely. And he said Michael Stipe would explain certain parts of the song or he would show him places in Athens that they were going around. And I couldn't tell either if he was talking about like this just happened 2 days ago or if this was he's met them several times and they've just been friends and it happened. But it didn't matter. It was just also interesting. And
it really was. And so obviously REM, you know, gives their endorsement to this Michael Shannon project.
It so must. That's I would great. Think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, the guitars, like they didn't seem, I would be nervous. Wouldn't like playing in front of, they're all probably REM fans for sure. They're not just these hired musicians that came in. They have to be fans to be able to want to play 31 songs and learn them all. What was that one story you told about, the 9-9.
Yeah. So one of the songs on Murmur, and by the way, I want to clarify one thing here. When Kevin said 31 songs, they did play more than just Murmur. We'll get to that in a moment. Because Murmur has 12 songs on it. But
Spoiler.
He did say in order to set up the song 9-9, he said that when they were just performing in Athens and the guys from REM were there, he said Michael Stipe later said to him, you know, after the show said to him, you know, as I was sitting there, you know, listening to you play, it you know, you got about 3-4 songs in and it occurred to me that sometime, you know, in this show, you're going to have to play 9-9, which apparently he told Michael Shannon was a song that REM even dropped from their live set because it was so hard to play.
Yeah. And you asked me after the show, like, what's so hard about that song? And I couldn't give you a straight answer other than maybe it's just the start stops and that kind of, like, it is an unusual song for REM. And I feel like a lot of bands have those. Pixies have like Bleed, if you can remember that song right off the bat, Doolittle. And they just have these songs that are on the album that you're not sure they're supposed to be there.
Right.
They're just, and maybe that's kind of where, what the song was. So.
Well, it's funny, Kevin, because when you and I went to see the New Pornographers at, what was that, a year or two ago? Something like that?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
And that one, which album were they doing? Was it Twin Cinema?
They did Twin Cinema, the full album.
They did the full album of Twin Cinema. And AC Newman was saying that a couple of times, a couple of those songs, he was like, these are really hard songs to play, because basically what he was saying was that when they recorded that album, there were, you know, a couple, 3 songs or whatever that they didn't anticipate they would ever play live. You know, they were really like studio creations, right? And then when you promise to play a whole album, you got to do those songs too, right? So.
I remembered it when you brought it up, but the fact that you remember that, that's great, because that's exactly what Michael Stipe was saying across. Yeah. It's like, you know, I realized halfway in, they're going to have to play this. This is going to be interesting.
That's right. So they played All of Murmur, and then, they did the Velvet Underground's There She Goes Again.
That's right. It's kind of like a transition to something else.
And Shannon said that he read on Wikipedia that was originally planned to be the closing track on Murmur. They were in with that cover. And then when he brought that up to the guys, they said, no, that's ridiculous. We would never do that. So,
I think he used a few more expletives. Yes. But yes. That's what he said.
He's saying, like, that's the dumbest thing in the world. No. So, but anyway, they played that there. And of course, that was on the Dead Letter Office album. So it must have been a B-side, I believe, probably to one of the Murmur singles. But anyway.
Probably.
So played that, then came back out and did all of Chronic Town.
Yes, all of it.
Which was really cool.
I was like, I didn't expect Stumble. I thought Boxcar was going to be hard to do, but they did it.
Good. That was really good. That was good. And man, the other song that ripped was Million.
Yes,
that's a great song. That's you know, that's kind of a punk song. You know what I mean?
They jangle it up,
but it's kind of a punk song. Yeah,
right. And when I was watching them, they were having a lot of fun playing that one too. Yeah. Like they were doing it throughout, but like they really put something into that one. Yes. I could tell that they were really enjoying playing that one.
That was cool.
Yeah,
and then they played about half of Reckoning, not in any kind of order, just like various songs from Reckoning.
Yeah. He's like, if you didn't know, these are from Reckoning. And I'm like, they're going to play the whole darn album, aren't they?
Yes. it seemed like it.
Felt like it.
So I got to hear Pretty Persuasion, which I just love.
Yeah. That is a great song. I think I told you at some point in my life, I used to say that was my favorite song, but I think I go between Driver 8 and a couple others. Yeah. So.
And then, I hate to bring this up because it's going to make us seem really lame, but that was the end of the first encore and we had to scoot because
your car would have been towed.
Well, there was an issue with the parking running out and I was nervous because DC will tow
cars. For sure.
And then also my wife wasn't feeling well. So I didn't want to, you know, after one encore, I was like, you know,
for sure,
let's head out. But I looked at Setlist FM and then they did sort of a variety of about maybe 6 or 7 more, REM songs, including a couple from one from Document, Finest Work Song.
Yeah, that was the supposedly the first time they'd played it live.
Yeah. They did, you noted Country Feedback, which is from Out of Time.
Right.
Yep.
Unusual. They played Just a Touch from Livestreet's Pageant. Yeah. yeah. and Swan H, I think.
Yeah. And Driver 8 from Fables.
Yep. And they I think they did a couple more for Reckoning.
I think
they
you're
did Rockville, of course, and maybe Second Guessing. They hadn't played that yet, had they? Had they? I don't know.
I don't think so. So anyway,
I'll have to go back and look. Whatever.
Anyway,
they it played everything
because we didn't see that part. So as far as we're concerned, that never happened.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because
it was circumstances. It happens. It's different than like when I had to leave a U2 concert. And me being one of the biggest U2 fans, like I feel worse about that one. But you know, it's just circumstances that came about.
Well, so. I looked at it like, don't be sad that it's over, be glad that it happened, right? So yeah, the port exactly. that we saw, there. We got to see, you know, the show, the main show and an extended encore. They were just fantastic. And I loved it. I really loved it. And I loved, you know, it just seemed like they just really loved the music they were playing and were very true to it, you know, honored it. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, what, you know, is it a tribute band? I guess it is, but it just seemed like a really, really cool tribute band.
Yeah. And I don't know if you have to do that, but I have to keep reminding myself that was not REM. Okay. You know, like, I can't now say that I've now seen REM 5 times. Right. That did not count. I had the same experience with Talking Heads as I feel like I've seen them live because I saw such a great tribute band play them once. And it just felt like I had just seen the Talking Heads and or what I would imagine the energy was like. Yeah. And I felt like that was the essence of that show, was they were trying to create the early energy of REM back in those early days. Right. Like that's what it would have been like had you got to see them at the 40 Watt in Athens in 1983. Right. So.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point, because by the time I saw REM, Play Live was the Fables tour, and they were doing like sort of theater,
yeah,
you know, type Fox venues by then.
Type places.
Yeah. So yeah, it did. In some weird way, you could sort of, you know, squint a little bit and think like I'm seeing REM in like a small club, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it just, I have to keep reminding myself that was not REM. It felt like the energy of it.
Yeah.
It was a great, it's like watching the Buddy Holly movie and thinking that, you know, that's Buddy Holly.
Right. So it was a lot of fun.
It was. And I am so thankful that you brought it to my attention, because I didn't know about the show prior to, and probably would have missed out because it was sold out. So, but Jim was like driving, I think, to one of the Suburbs Fest events. He's like, I forgot to get tickets. Can you?
Yes.
And Kevin, I was like, I got it, Jim. I'll jump on right now and get them.
Kevin, like a boss, came through. And this ended up being a sold out show. So I'm glad we did that.
Yep.
Yeah, very cool. And I think there's a few more dates on this tour that they're on. I know they were, I think they were next going to Philadelphia, and I don't know what from there, where else.
Yeah,
I know New York is on the list as well.
Right.
But yeah, you could really tell their love of REM in this.
Definitely.
Okay. So here's what I want to do for the playout song. You know, after all this talk about REM, you guys probably want to hear some REM, but I'm not going to do that. I'd rather you hear some Michael Shannon, and, you know, none of these REM covers, you know, I don't think they've actually recorded any of this stuff. It's just, you know, performed live. Mm-hmm. But he did sing on the George and Tammy soundtrack. He and Jessica Chastain, you know, actually sang those parts in the show. So
right.
We're going to leave you with a little Michael Shannon singing some George Jones. All right. That's what we'll
Super
do.
Super cool. I want to hear this.
All right. We'll do White Lightning. I think that's a good one for that. It sounds like a song maybe REM may have covered at some point. So that's how we'll connect that.
Okay. Cool, Jim. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks very much, Kevin. It's Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Lenihan on behalf of Patrick Foster. Thank you for listening, and he'll be back tomorrow.
Pass it around. Mighty, mighty please, and your pappy's born squeeze. White Lightning. Well, the G-Man, revenue is due. Searching for the place where he made his brew. They were looking, trying to book him, but the pepper kept on cooking. White Lightning.
Because this show was very late, which seemed unnecessarily late to me. But anyway, it was very late.
Yeah. And I read it went till almost 12:30.
Yeah. Yeah. That's late for us peoples.